No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype us at BBS Radio 1. That's BBS Radio 1. Tonight we have a special gift, a Christmas gift for America. Kathleen Gomez is with us, the former co-host of the show and our dear friend and a woman that knows everything about everything. And she's here and we're going to have a discussion tonight. But before I introduce her, let me just quickly run down what's going on with statehood, because there's a couple of good things. And Kathleen and I are going to talk about some of it tonight. But one thing that we have to start with is a shout out to Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia, who's become the 19th co-sponsor in the Senate on our bill, the New Columbia Admission Act, which would make the district the 51st state. Thank you, Senator Kaine. We now have both Maryland senators and one of the two Virginia senators. And this is very important because people often say people in Maryland and Virginia don't want this. But that's not true. They say that people in Maryland and Virginia don't want the district to become a state. But that's not true. And we've got Senator Cardin and Senator Mikulski from Maryland. Now we have Senator Kaine. And we just have one last Virginia senator to work on. And what a great segue this is. Who would that be, Kathleen?
Mark Warner, maybe?
Yeah. Your old friend Mark Warner. Mark, if you're out there listening, Senator Warner, you better get on board before I sick Kathleen Gomez on you.
Absolutely.
And then you'll be sorry.
You'll be really sorry.
Feliz Navidad. Prospero Año.
Wow.
Thanks for coming on. Yeah, that's all the Spanish I know.
That's pretty good.
How are things in Douglas, Arizona?
It snowed yesterday.
No way.
Yes, it snowed. And I think they got a lot of snow up north. This is crazy. I know El Nino. They're going to say it's El Nino. That's why it's like all messed up. But what was it in D.C.? 75 degrees?
75 degrees.
It was like
30. Can you believe
30.
That on Christmas?
It was 30 here in Arizona. I mean, this is like crazy. This is crazy stuff. But, you know, hey, it's El Nino. Don't worry about it. The polar bears are coming down to San Diego, but it's El Nino, so you don't have to worry about it, you know?
Yeah. They're coming down to break their friends out of the zoo down there.
Exactly.
They're doing a prison break any day. And 75 here. We've had the air conditioning on in the house for the last couple of days.
That's crazy.
Amazing.
Crazy stuff.
And I don't know if it's Monday or Tuesday, but one day early in the week, it's going to be 47 is going to be the high. So it's going to drop 30 degrees. I mean, just amazing to me.
Well,
but those Republicans, there's no such thing as global warming.
That's right. I have a lot of Republican friends who just keep on telling me that this is just all natural, that if you look over time and that the satellites have looked at it and really it has not gotten any hotter in the last, like, I don't know, it was 10 or 30 years. I'm like, I can tell you it's gotten hotter. Obviously, they're not reading the Earth's heat right, because every year it gets hotter in Arizona. So I don't know what it's just crazy. Too much information and not the right kind, I guess.
Yeah, and this Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma, who, I I put up right there with Donald Trump. He was on the Senate floor questioning all the stuff that the scientists had to say. And I know it's getting warmer in Oklahoma too. So, yes. Well, it's so great of you to come on. Kathleen has moved on and become a big-time lobbyist, so she doesn't have time for poor old friend Michael Brown anymore.
That's not true. You whine. You know, I forget how much you whine. I miss it a little, but not really that much.
But she's been nice enough to come back. I don't know what she's saying. I don't
see. Whining?
So that must be a Spanish word that I don't understand, whining. I'll have to look it up. But of course I'm a whiner. I'm a politician.
Exactly.
We're always talking about what's wrong with the world.
Yeah, so not doing anyway, anything
but
about
we've missed it. You. We've missed you.
I miss you guys too.
Great co-host.
If I didn't need a paycheck, I would have stayed on forever.
Yeah, I get that.
I'm great at being able to do a lot of things for free. I can do that really well, but it's hard for me to find anybody that'll pay me. So I jumped on the wagon for this one. And it's kind of interesting, you know, I'm with a bunch of tax guys. It's a whole different realm for me, you know. These guys it's the tax code. If anything, I think I was on there for 6 weeks. It's a great job. I worked 10 months and I'm off 2 months. But I had December, January off. So I worked about 6 weeks before, you know, I had to go on my hiatus. And I'm telling you, after seeing everything, all these tax codes and bills and laws, one thing I have definitely decided, there's just too many of it. It needs to be taken. They really need to rehaul it. They need to, it's just too much regulation. I mean, I think I've always been someone that believes that I'd like to believe that people do the best for everyone, but I think that deep down we're all kind of greedy and selfish. So I've always thought there's certain things that the government should be involved in. And I want to say this to the people, and I mean, I'm not doing a plug for H&R Block, but one thing that they have been fighting for, which I was shocked, was that there's no minimum standards for people who do tax preparer. So I was in South Tucson, right? And I see this sign. It says, you know, I do yard work. I do, you know, ironing. I do tax. I prepare taxes. And I'm thinking, that's so odd. And then I realized, do you realize that there is not a minimum standards across the nation for people who prepare your taxes? And those people who don't have any kind of credentials go in and they're like, okay, hola, you know, what do you want to do? How much money do you want back from the government? And then they kind of just sit there and manipulate it, and there's so much tax fraud when it comes to this stuff, and the Republicans don't want to do the right thing because they feel that that's just empowering the IRS, and they're mad at the IRS because of all the tax, remember what was it, a year or two when the IRS wasn't giving all these different organizations tax-free status? And they got all mad, and they were saying they were giving it more to the Democrats and the Republicans. So now the Republicans don't want to pass a minimum standards for people who prepare your taxes. And to me, that's just something that should be done, just like having nurses certified and doctors certified. People who prepare your taxes, because it's so complex, they should at least have some certification that they know what they're doing. Wouldn't you think?
Well, yeah. I mean, absolutely. I did my taxes for years when I started my own business. And it was a small business. And I got pretty good at it. But I reached a point as the business started to grow where I just didn't understand. I mean, I had to fill out schedules. I had no idea what they were. I had no idea. So I've had an accountant for 25 years that does my taxes. But now that you've told me this, and I know you don't have to be qualified, and I need a job, I want everybody to go on the internet and go to MikeWillGetMyRefund.com
exactly.
And send me your business because I'll do your taxes. Yeah.
Just tell me how much you want.
I think that's just crazy.
It's crazy. So I would say to everyone, like, you should call your Congress, especially as the tax season starts, or be, you know, you don't have to go to an accountant, you know, but you need to go to someone at least knows how to prepare it. And you know, and it's kind of the thing where, you know, you really – we'd all like to like scam IRS, but I wouldn't advise it because they kind of get you. And meanwhile, they can come after you, you know, years later. But it's just something that it should just be done. There should be, if you go to the guy in South Tucson, he should at least have some background, maybe 8 hours of, you know, learning how what the tax code is and how to do it legally and how to do it right. So, you know, the people, if you do get a refund, you know that it's legit. Even though I know a lot of people think that, I can just manipulate it. You really can. It always comes back to bite you. So anyway, that's one thing I've learned so far.
Well, and if you want to know how powerful the IRS is, you need to get, when you buy a house, the one thing you need to do, you'll never get a mortgage unless you can prove that there's no taxes owed on the house.
Right.
Because, or that you don't owe any back taxes. Because the IRS can come in and seize your property, it can seize your bank accounts, and I guess that's something they need to do to make sure that they can enforce the law, but you need to have those taxes right. Yeah, it's absolutely, and it's getting crazier and crazier. You know, last year somebody stole my tax return.
Well, you weren't the only one. There were several senators that had their identity, you know, taken. And so they've stepped up and done some fraud. But this is what's so crazy. This is when the Democrats and Republicans really need to get over their whole party affiliation and do the right thing. You know, the Republicans, they are afraid that this would give more power to the IRS. It doesn't. It just is the right thing for the norm, for every, like, common person who can't afford to have an accountant, can't afford to have, you know, a CPA. This is where it gets so messed up in Washington, you know. Get over these things that happened 2 years ago and look, does this actually do the best thing for the people of the United States? Then let's maybe do it. You know, it's just so crazy. It's getting crazier and crazier. Well, let's talk a little bit about the statehood before I want to get on one of my big soapboxes, which is I'm back on the border, the border again. You know how I get when I'm on the border. So let's talk about statehood and then we could talk about an issue that I'm sure I won't be popular with. And then I want to talk to you about Trump. Oh, my God. Yeah. Let's talk about Trump.
Oh, my God.
My guy.
Well, I got to tell you what. Let's not get on Trump yet.
Okay.
Let's talk a little bit about statehood. And one thing that I'm doing that Kathleen's helping me with is our brand new website called Teach Democracy, which is an attempt to get the word out about not only get the word out about D.C. statehood, but to create a website where people can go and learn about civil rights and learn about the civil rights movement, learn about democracy. Because you know what? Democracy takes an engaged populace. Thomas Jefferson said the single most important title of a person in a democracy is the title of citizen. That's the most important thing can be. So, and he also believed that education was essential to having a good democracy, because people have to know what they're doing and they have to be engaged. So we're getting out there. We're starting to tweet and put it out on Facebook, and soon the website will be published, and you can all go to it. And we encourage you to go on Twitter and Facebook and like teachdemocracy.net. Go take a look at what we're doing on the internet, and that'll give you some sense of what the website's going to be about. And
We're getting ready to put up the website. They may not find that right now, but it's going to be probably in the next 2 days you'll be able to see it. But on Twitter, we're at TeachDemocracy1. That's our Twitter account. You're welcome. I know. See, this is why I have to be around all the time. I just can't, you know, you just don't get it right. But then on Facebook, do Teach Democracy, and you'll see our page. And it's really, I think it's kind of very interesting because we do talk statehood is definitely one of the big issues we're talking about, but it's all about civil rights and it's about democracy and being a good citizen. And you know, and there was one thing I thought was really interesting. There was a test on, you know, could you pass the citizenship test? And I wonder if most Americans could. I bet you they don't. I bet they could not.
I bet they couldn't. You know? And you know, they do this stuff all the time. You know, you see this stuff, every couple of years or whatever, somebody goes out. I mean, Jay Leno used to walk around the street, you know, who is your senator? Who is your congressman? Who is your representative? People didn't
know. Who's your president?
Who's your president? Yeah. And it's certainly the intricacies of legislation and the things that get done in Washington. That's why lobbyists get ahead, get so much sway. And because we don't know what's going on. I was watching the news today, and there's some facility that they built in Afghanistan, which, I don't know, cost $160 million or something that the federal government paid for. And the top generals in Afghanistan said, don't build it. We don't need it. It's redundant. But you know what? They built it anyway. And some commentator on the show said, well, the reason they built it is because they had the money. And you know that's the rule. If you have the money, spend it. Don't
before
give it
the new, yeah, before the new budget, or you lose
before
it.
Before the new budget comes out, and that's right. True in Washington. We say it all the time, right? Spend the money,
yes.
Don't give it back. I mean, and that's just crazy. And if people were more engaged and more involved, it would be a lot harder to do that. But people don't know what's going on. And you know what? When you got what's our budget these days? I don't even know anymore. But trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. It's easy to hide that stuff.
Hell
like
yeah.
The highway to nowhere. Remember in Alaska?
Yes. Bridge to nowhere. To build
the
bridge that went
nowhere.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. So. It was great, too. I just want to say, I in searching for things to put on, you know, the website and to tweet and do all that stuff was a great quote by Thomas Jefferson, who said, I prefer a dangerous freedom to a peaceful slavery. And I thought, man, that is D.C. statehood. D.C., the citizens of D.C., I think, are starting to realize that it's better to be representative than just to be accepting of the fact that they have no representation. And so I thought that was a great quote of what should be happening now in D.C. And I gather since I left, there has been a lot of movement, right?
Yeah, there has been a lot of movement. And one of the things that I think has been most helpful lately, and maybe even most surprising, is that the Washington Post did a poll that showed that 71% of the people that live in the District of Columbia are for D.C. statehood. And I think that's a new all-time high. I don't think we've ever had what we've even had local people who have been divided on this issue. So 71% being in favor of statehood, that really says something. And it says the people of the district are ready for this now. And so we're going to push. And this is the perfect segue to Donald Trump, because this is my prediction. My prediction is that Mr. Trump, and before I trash him, let me say that they asked him if he believed in D.C. statehood, and he said yes. So mm-hmm. So I got to pat him on the back for that. But Mr. Trump, I think, is going to give us a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic president.
I'm not so sure about that, to tell you the truth.
All right, well, let's hear what you have to say.
All right, well, for instance, it came out in the Tucson paper. You know, coming back to Douglas, which has been a border town, and I grew up in it, and I always thought it was the greatest place to be because I had the best of both worlds, Mexico and the United States. And now it's kind of at the reverse. It's like the not the best of both worlds because of the kind of policies we've had. Now, I was reading an article where in November and December, 10,500 unaccompanied children made it into the U.S. You know, they come into the U.S. and then they give themselves up to the Border Patrol. The Border Patrol takes them, then takes them to a shelter. They have to do all this paperwork, make sure they're safe, that they haven't been, you know, abused, which of course you want to do. Now, what then happens is they end up coming over here because they have some kind of relative, an aunt, a cousin, somebody from the town, whatever. They are notified. Those people then come, and they are sponsors them. But it's about 30, maybe 2 or 3 months before the children can leave the shelter because you got to vet the people, make sure that there was a connection, do a background check, fingerprint them, all that, which is good. But it's a lot of money, and it comes out of – it's a big cost to Arizona because – you know, for instance, when we had the hospital, when I worked down here at the local hospital, it was over 105 years old, we were handling a lot of people who crossed border. It either got lost in the desert, were very sick. They got, you know, there was one night when I got called down there to help out because two vans packed. I mean, you know, you have a van, maybe it holds like six people and you've got 30 people in them rolled over because of the weight. Hurt all the people in it. There were a lot of young, you know, teenagers. So the cost of that to the hospital was probably that night a good maybe $1 million, because then we had to air vac a lot of them, which is about $5,000 to $10,000 for each person because you can't take more than one. And then they got to come back. So to make a long story short, our hospital was not being reimbursed by the Border Patrol in D.C. and it kept on adding up, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million, and basically our doors shut down. People were coming in to have babies, in which we can't have babies. We didn't have the doctor, so we had to air vac people every time they came in. But they knew, because of the policy of the United States and that you cannot refuse people in an emergency room, they came to have their babies. They came to get medicine, to get, you know, health care. And that's wonderful. You want to take care of everyone. But in real time and real money, you can't. So to make the story short, our hospital closed. Now, that hospital was the closest thing for this community to get anywhere. Now, anybody wants to have a baby, you got a heart attack, you're going to have to take a 30-minute ambulance ride. But the ambulance went with service, went with the hospital. So now you're relying on the local fire department, which doesn't have the capability to do that. So it has put such a stress on the economy. And the other issue is so many of the... You know, and I always thought, hey, better to educate, you know, the people from Mexico than not let them into our schools. But I'm seeing where the school system is so taxed that, you know, when you have a good two-thirds of the population in Mexico coming over here, they buy homes, or they buy a home, and then everyone uses that as an address. It really takes away from the school system. It basically is making them go broke. So I come back, and every time I come back, it's worse and worse. It looks more like Northern AP, which I know a lot of people are going to get mad at me, but it's true. I go to Walmart, nobody speaks English. Everyone who works there lives in Agua Prieta. You know, it's just so complex. And when you tell me, well, what can we do about it? You don't want to turn all these people away. I see the ramifications of not having anything done, because I see the community dragging down, having less money, less services, but those in D.C. don't see it. You know, we had this conversation. She said, but yeah, Kathleen, what are you going to do with these poor children? You don't want to turn them away. But taking them in is such a heavy burden if you don't get reimbursed by the federal government, and that's our taxpaying money. So it's a terrible... what do you want to call it, you know, situation. I wanted to say another fancy word, I can't think of it, but I think what should happen is the people in D.C. should come down here and just spend 3 weeks on the border and let us walk you through what's happening to make you understand that this is a real crisis. Now, this is coming to my point why Trump is so popular. So they talked about how the shelter is very homey, they're teaching them math, English, and other courses, they've got three meals a day, they get clothes, they get health care, okay? Now, listen to the comments of the people that after this article. This article was in published, I think it was, I'll come back to it, but it was recently, if you want to Google, unaccompanied children, Arizona Daily Star, you'll see the major article. But these were the comments. And one comment was, nobody seems to be worried about impoverished American citizens and homeless vets, but these illegals get great housing. Next one, great work, Jamie. These kids are in a tough spot. You're part of a hard work. So that was one thing good. Next one, unaccompanied migrant minors is almost full as the number of children and teens making the journey north rises. Good thing we don't have any impoverished youth of our own to care for. Unaccompanied migrant minors is almost up. Okay, next one. The goal is their registration into a safe space, and they are doing that. That's nice. I gather that the shelter, whose exterior seems attractive, is relatively affordable for U.S. achievers, defined as those who pay income or property taxes. I have been to Mexico four times and Costa Rica. I don't see the gang issues that they're talking about. Of course, I'm careful to avoid possibly dangerous locales such as Tucson, south of Valencia after dark, which is South Tucson, which is considered as dangerous as some of these other locations in Central America. Anyway, more disadvantaged immigrants, legal or illegal, is what Democrats, starting with our feckless president, want, so they should be happy. I'll just keep on working and paying my taxes owed. Then there's
all right, okay,
all right,
okay,
okay.
All right,
so
now
wait, I haven't finished. Now this is what people are feeling, and Trump is saying it for them, because nobody will talk about how people feel when they're middle class, not even middle class, let's say they're below middle class, just struggling to make paycheck to paycheck. They're sitting there, they can't afford a house, they can't afford a lot of things, they can't send their children to school, which costs $200,000 now, even $100,000 or $160,000 in state universities. People are angry. And Trump is representing them by saying the things that nobody will. Until you can talk to these people and tell them that, you know what, it's going to be okay, you're going to get what everyone else gets, you're going to have a Trump that wins. I'm just saying.
Well, look, first of all, if you're out there listening to this, call in and help me, because obviously Kathleen's on a roll. But first of all, in Washington, D.C., and I know when you say Washington, D.C., you mean the politicians and not the people that actually live here.
Right.
But we feel the pain because we have a similar situation, not with immigration, but we provide security for the White House. And you know, we 70%, 60-some percent of the people that live in this city, I mean that work in the city, do not live in this city. So we maintain the roads for them, and we provide ambulances for them, and all this stuff we don't get reimbursed for from the federal government. And for years we've been complaining about it because it's a burden to our economy. To you know, the population in the District of Columbia goes from 600,000 to over a million. 675,000 to over a million every day, doubles, in fact, from people from Maryland and Virginia who work here. And we have to pay for all that stuff. And every time the president goes out, even though he's surrounded by Secret Service, he's got to be surrounded by D.C. cops as well in case an arrest is affected.
But at least you're all citizens.
Affected.
You're all citizens.
But we don't get reimbursed for that. So I feel that. And we really, the federal government does need to develop a policy to deal with it. The burden shouldn't be on Arizona, California, New Mexico, and Texas. You know, it shouldn't just be in those places. But that's not, you're wrong about one thing. That's not what Trump's saying. Trump's calling Mexicans, he's calling the Mexican people thieves and bandits, and he's saying that Muslims should be banned. We, a country that was founded on religious freedom, should ban people on the basis of their religion.
I understand
the anger, but this man's a racist, and he's playing the bottom.
No, he's
playing,
he's not.
He's off the bottom of the deck, which is the oldest.
Talking the talk that nobody will. He's actually not afraid to say things that people are feeling. We've gotten so politically correct. Heaven forbid that we should say something that is not, like, acceptable. Nothing's acceptable. You have to be
Wait a second. It's an issue.
It's an issue, Michael. It's an issue that is impacting this
town
and this community.
But what next,
it's
Kathleen?
More than an issue.
Do we start
you know
to use
next?
The...
No. You know what's next?
Do we start to use the
people.
N-word? That's the next
no.
step?
You know what's next is that you have to do it legal. My grandparents did it legal. They actually got an amnesty. I know a lot of people who did it legal. When you have 10,500 unaccompanied children crossing in, but then when I read the article, it says they all have somebody here already. So it's a way for them to get in. We take care of all of them. We take care of all of their needs. And I'm sitting here looking at people in this town who have nothing, who don't have health care, who
are never
going to go to college. No, it's not right. And until you say the words that are uncomfortable to everyone, we cannot let everyone in, you're not going to get anywhere, because people are so angry. It's unbelievable. And Trump is the only one that are saying things to stir the pot. When you listen to the GOP and you listen to the Democrats, it's all the same hogwash. They've been saying the same thing over and over, and people are just exhausted and tired and angry. And I think Trump has a real good chance, if it continues, if no real politician can step up and say, I hear your pain, I understand why you're angry, and this is what I'm going to do, and then do it, you're going to have Trumps more and more and more of them. And maybe
that's
what
the one thing I agree with. That's the one thing I agree with. We may have to take a break and listen to a song because I'm on the internet right now getting my airline ticket so I can come to Douglas, tie your ass up, throw you in the trunk of a car, and do an intervention, a liberal intervention.
And I will vote for Hillary Clinton if you tie my feet to fire and coal and burn me. I will vote for her.
But let me ask you something. Do you want to see this guy? Do you want to see this guy?
I want to see this guy.
Who doesn't have any moral character?
Yes.
And who is a racist, and when people say things about him, that he turns around and says, you're fat, you're ugly, or he fights like a 12-year-old.
You know why?
You want to see him as president of the United
States? I'm so fed up with Washington. When I went there, I don't see the Washington I went to school. I see a lot of very, very wealthy people. And the African-Americans who were once there are all kind of being pushed out. I just see a place that's becoming more like New York and Manhattan, which is only for the rich. I'd love to see Trump go in there and stir the pot and make everyone so flippin' nervous that maybe they're going to say, hey, you know what? We better start doing what we say. We better start representing the people and stop thinking that we know everything better than the common citizen who votes for us. Yes, I want to see Trump go in there and stir the pot and make everyone very uncomfortable. I think that's what
we need.
Well,
I'll tell you what. Donald Trump has never spread the wealth. And if you're worried about gentrification in the District of Columbia and black people being pushed out, which I think people that have been here for years, we all worry about that.
But
if you're worried about that, Trump's not your man. Trump's never stopped gentrification. Trump is gentrification.
It's been happening, and it wasn't caused by Trump in D.C., and you know that. It's caused by all the politicians in there, and you guys don't have stated it, but I also wonder about your city council. This guy is going to make every politician so scared, they're going to have nightmares, and it might just make them do the right thing because they're not doing it now.
Well, I'll tell you the big...
So you want to break the
wait a second. I'll tell you the big mistake that the Republican Party is making, and you've hit on it, and that is they shouldn't be worried about getting rid of Trump as much as they should be worried about why people are attracted to him. And
exactly.
I agree with you. They're angry. People are angry, and that's why they're attracted to him. But you know what? The fact that you're angry and scared, we have a long history of people like Joseph McCarthy. That's why people backed Joseph McCarthy, because they were scared. When I grew up in North New Jersey, we had a guy named Imperiali. A black person couldn't walk through my neighborhood and be safe. You were safer in an all-black neighborhood than you were in my neighborhood because this guy was a vigilante.
Let me tell you.
My grandmother, wait a second.
Grandmother
and all the citizens supported Imperiali because they were like, well, he keeps the neighborhood safe. He doesn't keep the neighborhood safe, and Trump's not going to keep America safe, and Trump's not going to help anybody but Trump.
If you look at the GOP candidates, there's nobody who's really got any ideas or fresh. And you look at Hillary and Bernie. I love Bernie, but he's just like too far left for most people. Hillary's just another liar. She's just someone who's part of the establishment. She wants to be the first woman. I don't really ever liked her. I don't like the people who work for her. It's just going to be more of the same. Do I want more of the same? No. And I think that's what Americans are saying. And I think it's across the board. I think it's blacks. I think there's Mexicans. I think there's purple people. I think there's Indian and there's the white people. There's females. Don't want to vote for Hillary just because she's a woman. They want to vote for somebody they can trust. How can you trust her? She's lied a lot. Most politicians lie so much. Look at Ted Cruz. I voted for immigration. I didn't vote for immigration. Oh, I voted for immigration just based on a small thing. Now, my son's very upset with Rubio because he wants to have visas for, what is it, people who have high skills, which is going to compete with the youth that we have today who can't even freaking find jobs anymore in our market. There's really, really, and you look at every issue, there's some real bad things going on, and D.C. is not doing them. And so when people look at Trump, they say, you know what, he is an asshole. He does say things inappropriate, but dang it, at least we believe him. We believe him that he is who he is, and he'll do what he says because he's just somebody you cannot, you know, you just don't know what he's going to bring. But people feel it's better than what's been there and better than what the establishment has to give us. So we have to wake up.
We're going to take a little break so somebody can dump a bucket of water on Kathleen, cool her off, and we can get some liberals in there to deprogram her. But I'm going to, before we take the break, I'm going to say that is an old quote from Mae West. Given to given two bad things that I've never, given the choice between two bad things, I will always take the one that I've never tried. So, there may be some truth to that. But now here's a little bit from Pitbull, and how appropriate for Kathleen to have a song from a guy named Pitbull. We'll be back in a minute.
Mr. Worldwide to infinity, you know the roof on fire. We gon' boogie, hoogie, hoogie, jiggle, wiggle, and dance like the roof on fire.
We drink, drink, and take shots until we fall out like the roof on fire. Now, baby, get my booty naked, take off all your clothes, and light the roof on fire.
Tell them, baby, 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 I'm on fire. I tell them, baby, 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 I'm a fireball.
Okay, and I know we're back, and I know there are other crazy people out there. Kathleen can't be the only crazy person in America. There are other crazy people out there in America. So call in and let us know how you feel. And, you know, the one big question I have, Kathleen, is I agree with you that people are angry. And, you know, I had Diego and Trisha on the show, and it's funny that they kind of said the same thing. You know, Diego said, I like Don Trump, but I don't think he's going to get elected. And Trisha said, I like Bernie Sanders, but I don't think he's going to be elected. And you know, I think that Trump and Sanders are both, you know, opposite sides of the same coin. I think people are attracted to to Bernie for the same reason you're talking about them being attracted to Trump, and that is the idea that government's not working. We're not doing the things we should, and they want somebody that's not the same old. They want somebody that's outside the box, and I think the Republicans are making a big mistake by not addressing that, and I think the Democrats, too, are making a mistake by not addressing it. We need to take a long, hard look and say, why are people so dissatisfied in America? And until we do that, I agree, we're going to have problems.
And, you know, in a conversation we just had with the wonderful producer, Don, he made a good point. I think if people are going to vote for Trump just to see if their vote is counting, because I think a lot of people think it's rigged. I really do. And I can't blame them, because I think now as we're going to this absentee ballot or voting by computer, it's so easily to be hacked. Who can trust anything anymore? I think we have to go back where on November 4th, it's a national holiday. Get rid of Columbus Day. Sorry, Italians. Or get rid of St. Patrick.
Get
sorry
rid of Columbus
to the Irish.
Day.
Yes, get
second.
Rid and have a national day because of this. We sit there and we talk about how proud we are of our veterans and how proud we are of our military and what sacrifices they are making. Yet we're too lazy to vote. And that's the number of reasons that they're over there fighting and losing their lives is to protect us for the freedom of religion, the freedom to vote, all those things. So if you believe in the military and what they're doing, you believe that there's a sacrifice that these people are doing, you should get off your butts and go and vote and go to a polling place. But now they're closing polling places because we're all going to go through this high-tech stuff, which we know by whether you file your taxes on the internet, it can be hacked. So what we need to do is we need to call it a national holiday. Okay. Everyone needs to have proven their vote or they get fined, and go back to that's what it takes. Democracy, as you always said, is work. It's not free. We're not entitled to it. We have to work for it. So one day out of every year or 2 years or whatever, you have to, you know, get off your butt, go stand in line to vote. We're almost everywhere else in the world that doesn't have that would love to be able to do it. And when they do, they sit there like, you know, what was in Afghanistan, and they show you that they actually, you know, they have the little red dot on their finger. Right. They're so proud of it. I remember when my father-in-law would talk about not being able to vote. When he got to vote over here, actually in Canada, he said, people don't understand what they have. You know, we become so lazy and so apathetic and, you know, oh, I don't believe in politicians. It's not my job. I elected them. Let them do it. Well, you can't. Just like a teacher, just like anything, you have to follow that person. You have to go to those town hall meetings. You have to get involved. You have to ask them what they're doing. This is not a free ride. And that's what we've become. Everything is a free ride. We're all entitled to this. We don't have to work for it. And that's where we've gone wrong. So,
well,
that's
you know, that finally something we agree upon. I think you should vote. And if you don't vote, don't bitch. You know, you
right.
do have, it should be seen as an obligation as well as a privilege. And yeah, my grandmother, I mean, you and I could go on about this all day about your father-in-law and other people, you know, and my grandmother was the same way. She was an immigrant. She understood that, you know, she was around when when women were not allowed to vote. And so she made sure that she got to vote. You know, it was one thing she never missed. She never missed voting. And I think it's important. Everybody needs to do it. You know, certainly all the work I do here in Washington is based on expanding the franchise to the people of the District of Columbia. So it's really important. But I got it. The one thing that I disagree with about our friend Donald Trump is that I think he's the basis type of politician that we need to make sure he doesn't get elected because he's just another Joe McCarthy or Huey Long or any of these people.
Well, let me just give you an example. You told me. Well, you know, you told me about how, you know, he didn't spread the wealth or whatever. I'll tell you a story. When I was in New York, and I guess this was in the late 80s, early 90s, Wolfman Rink, which is right down there in Central Park, close to maybe its 60th, you know, sat there. It had gone into total disarray. So there was the mayor was going to fix it up. You know, that's when they were trying to bring the park back after all that terrible stuff. You know, you went into Central Park, you wouldn't come out alive, to renovate it and get it back going. Well, they spent millions of it, the New York City government or whatever, the mayor, whatever, threw money at it. They couldn't get it right. They tried to open, something else went wrong. Donald Trump was looking at it. Now, and before that, you know, I'm not a great fan of Donald Trump. I just think he's saying the things that people want to hear. But he kept on looking at it outside of his office, and he finally said, you know what, I'm so tired of this. I'm going to go in and fix it. And you know, within two weeks or a month or so, he had that fixed, up and running and working way below the cost that the city government had spent and not been able to do it. And there are a lot of instances like that, and I think that's what people want. They want somebody to go in and just, you know, kind of go through those agencies and say, you're not doing your job, this is what you could do, or I'm going to do it, put the fear of God in some of the civil servants and have them do their job. So, I mean, those are the things that I saw. And let me tell you, we use that skating rink time and time again. That's where Mateo and Diego learned how to skate. And it probably wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for Donald Trump. So,
well, you know what? I think that's an example.
A lovely story.
That it is a lovely story, especially that your sons that live in Arizona know how to skate, but
exactly.
Let's hope they know how to swim too, because there's way more swimming pools. I've been to Arizona, way more swimming pools than skating rinks. But and you could repeat that story over and over again, and I think we all accept that private enterprise and business really does do things so much better than government in many cases. But the problem with business is they can't be trusted. You need regulation. You need regulation, yes, to make sure that when they're pulling the toxic waste out of the park, they're not dumping it behind your apartment building.
I agree. You know? I agree with you, but also, you need regulation, but what's happened is now there's overregulation. I look at my friend Alan from Kansas, has a landscaping business. He has so much regulations just to have a landscape. I can't believe it. I couldn't believe the things he told me. And then we're driving around, and I see all these little trucks that I don't have the you know, Department of Transportation, you know, identification on it. They're all like, I mean, I love the Mexicans in Kansas City, but there are a lot of Mexicans who just get a truck, put a mower, and they go out, and they don't have any of the regulations that he has. And it is amazing what the cost that he has as far as payroll, workman's comp, unemployment and then dealing with the Department of Transportation, he could get fined if his tire isn't at the exact pressure it needs to be. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's overregulation. But I agree with you. Capitalism is something that is all about profit, and it doesn't necessarily, like minimum standards on your tax, you know, for tax preparers. Right. That should be something that's regulated for every state. It should be all the same. So you need someone to come in there and shake it up so that I think the moderates can rise up, because the moderates, the people who have common sense, the ones that are moderate Republicans or moderate Democrats, are too afraid to step out because nobody votes in primaries except the extreme left, right, or the extreme right, what I said, the extreme left and extreme right. And then you get these crazy people that are running the show. And so citizens have got to wake up. You got to vote in the primaries. You got to get involved and stop, you know, whining about, I hate politicians. Well, you know what? Politicians reflect who we are. They're just a reflection of us, right?
And that's the thing. That's the thing. Where have the moderates gone? And you're right. People have to understand. And here we come full circle again. This is part of the mission of Teach Democracy, to make good citizens. But people have to understand how the process works. And you know, like in the District of Columbia, we have preferential primaries. We have party primaries. You have to be registered as a Democrat or a Republican to vote in the primaries, okay? So we have all these people that have registered as independents. They've registered as independents because they don't align themselves with the Democratic Party, and they don't align themselves with the Republican Party, and they look at them and they say, there's problems with both of them, so I'm just going to be an independent. I'm not going to be affiliated. But in the long run, they get their, you know, they don't have the input because they're not allowed to vote. And after the primary's over in D.C., the election is over in D.C.
Exactly.
Now, you've worked on my campaigns.
Yes.
You've worked on my campaign, so you know that on election day, we go out and give out donuts when I get the Democratic nomination, because the Democrats always win. And once you, in D.C., and once you've won the Democratic primary, then you've won. So if you're not voting in that primary, your vote doesn't count for much in the District of Columbia. And that's true in a lot of places. So that's absolutely true. People have to understand how the system works.
Exactly. And I think, you know, one thing that just appalled me is how, you know, in D.C., things can be run by just a handful of people, you know, and nobody questions them. And if you haven't, for a bit, if you question them, then they come out to lynch you. You know, there's got to be a lot of shakeup. And to me, I'm thinking that statehood for D.C. is going to be great because we're bringing in new people. We're bringing in people that have never been involved before who are starting to say, yeah, you're right. I should have representation. And I feel that it'll be a big change because we're getting a different crowd of people. We're not getting the same old establishment doing the same old, same old. And I'm sorry if anyone in D.C. is offended, but you know me, I'm going to say my mind, and I don't care if you get offended, that I think you guys are doing the wrong thing. A lot of the so-called political establishment in the D.C., you know, movement. So I think Teach Democracy is a fresh approach, bringing in new people who are going to look at this and say, you know what? We need to do things this way, or let's do it that way. Or, you know, I just think the critical mass is occurring, which is really exciting to see.
Right. And that's absolutely true in D.C. And part of the problem in D.C. is, being a nation's capital, we really do focus on national politics. People know more about what's going on between Bernie and Hillary and Trump and people like that than they really know about what's going on in the city council. And that, again, hurts them. Many, many times on this show, you said, go to the school board, find out what's going on, go to the community meeting, make sure you know, make sure you vote. And that's true. You've got to, I mean, just in D.C. alone, we have a $9 billion budget. They have $9 billion of your money. Just imagine if you had an investment broker or somebody that worked for you and you were just giving them tons of money, you'd have some idea what they're doing with it.
Exactly.
Here, you know, we have very little, and we end up with brilliant, brilliant ideas like a $200 million streetcar that hasn't moved. It still hasn't moved, Kathleen.
That is amazing to me. Even in Tucson, they have one about the, I think, a little bit longer. It's working. It worked like the minute that they, I think it was maybe a year or two to get everything together, but they have it working. How can you not have that H Street electrical, what do they call it, train? How can it not be working? Yeah. Aren't they still like running
well,
it with
it's
no
working.
People outside?
They're just... The politics of it. I mean, it runs back and forth, but there aren't any people on it because of the politics of it, that they're not sure it's safe and that they did this and that, and they put in, it wasn't planned very well. It only goes a short distance. They put tracks up
to Anacostia.
Right. They should have gone into Anacostia. They put tracks up to Union Station without asking the federal government if that was okay. When the federal government owns Union Station,
God.
I mean, you would think if you're going to run something into a federal facility, you'd see if it was okay. So, there's mostly it's political problems, and you know, and that's just one example. We could go on and on, and I'm sure that's true in every jurisdiction. And you know, we used to say when I worked for Indians List and we were training people to run for public office, we'd say, if you're not at the table, you don't get to eat. You
right.
gotta be at the table. So you not only gotta vote, but you gotta go out there and be involved.
And to those people who might say, well, see, that's why DC shouldn't be a state, because they can't run their city affairs well, there's a lot of places throughout the United States that does the same thing.
Yeah, if that was the
was the
criteria, none of us would be a state, right? I mean,
exactly.
You know.
And I think what statehood would do would be getting more people involved, and you'd see, and maybe that's the fear of the local establishment, is that fresh people would come in and start running for these positions, especially if they're paid. You know, these were actually paid positions. Can you imagine everybody be running for it?
Yeah, well, you know,
other than based on volunteers like you and me, and I mean, I think you'd be a great senator, but I think that would be, you know, one of the issues that maybe the establishment is going. So, you know, D.C., a $9 billion budget, you guys rate, you know, $9 billion of your taxes is being money funneled into the city, and that nobody knows what's going on. You know, even my great Democratic friends who say, oh, state is never going to happen in my lifetime. I'm sitting here thinking, you're educated. You know how the system works. How can you not be concerned how your taxes are being spent? Because you all pay it. It's a phenomenal thing that I just can't quite, figure out how some of my great leaders that are my Democratic friends just don't seem to get that. I mean, that's like basic 101, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's politics 101, and we don't get it nationwide. I mean, it really is ridiculous that in the last election in Washington, D.C., because our business in Washington is politics. I mean, it's like Detroit making cars or L.A. making movies. We make politics. And still only about 35% of the registered voters showed up to vote. And that's not eligible voters. That's just registered voters. So, yeah, it's really crazy. Tell me
some of the things you think have happened with D.C. statehood in the past year that never happened. I guess the survey by the Washington Post was a huge deal.
Yeah, and also, you know, we've been accepted. Senator Strauss worked hard to get us accepted into the Unrepresented Nations and People Organization, which is an international organization that goes in front of the United Nations and the European Union, and so we're taking it to an international scale. We're taking things into be on the international forum. We also currently talk to the Organization of American States, which you know is a very powerful organization in Washington that represents all of North and South America and Latin America. So we're trying to go international, and that's a big deal. That's happening. In addition to that, we have 147 co-sponsors for legislation in the House and Senate. That's more than we've ever had. and on a statehood bill. And even though we're not going to get it through the House because it's dominated by Republicans right now, and when you have a Republican speaker, he has to move the legislation in order for you to get a vote, and that's not going to happen. We're still building momentum because every 2 years we have a new government.
Right.
So we could have Democrats next time or the time after that or people that are more sympathetic. And, you know, we've been at this for 214 years. So that's another big thing, big plus, is that we're getting that many co-sponsors and we're building momentum. So basically it's going pretty well. And actually the government, they're not putting enough money into it, but they are starting to put a little money into it. And so those are all positive steps. And of course, having 71% of the people behind us, I think that that's going to move some politicians that you've been talking about tonight on the D.C. City Council and other places. It's going to move them, because if they don't do something for statehood, they're going to have some explaining to do come the next election, because people want to get this done. So I think those are all positive things. And before we let you go, I have to thank you not only for being on the show tonight, but for working so hard for the people of Washington, D.C., because you've worked very hard on several different occasions to help with statehood. And you're still doing that through Teach Democracy. So we very much appreciate that. And
I've got this archived, right? This is all being archived, I gather.
Yes. And to those people that are Skyping in right now saying, build a fence around Washington, D.C. to keep Kathleen out. No, we're not going to do that.
I'm going to let Trump just dump me, bring me up in his helicopter and let me like parachute in.
As long as we can vet her, as long as we can vet her and she has the right visa, we're going to let her in. But thank you, Kathleen Gomez. We have a few seconds left and I'm going to let you have the final word.
Oh my gosh. No, thank you so much for letting me come on the show. I really miss it. And thank you to all the people who've listened to that said they miss me. I really appreciate it, because there were times that I wondered if anyone was listening other than my children or my parents, who I would threaten to, you know, make sure they listen. But I really appreciate it, and I really miss the show, and I miss you guys. And you know, because I worked on the issue of statehood, it's the right thing to do. It's just amazing to me that you guys don't have the representation, and having lived there for 10 years, I remember thinking about that, and that was back in the 80s, not to say how old I am, but no, it's been something I've really enjoyed, and I'm so happy that you've kind of included me, and I've missed the show, and I miss you guys, and I do listen to you, and, you know, I'll be back. Hopefully you'll invite me back when I'm, you know, ready to talk about some other unpopular issue. And give my little tweet about, you know, my little spin on it. So thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. I miss you guys. And Merry Christmas to everyone and Happy New Year. And let's all get involved. 2016 is going to be very interesting.
And you're always welcome. And my Christmas present to you is I'm not going to tell people how old you are.
Thank you.
Christmas, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Thanks, Kathleen.
Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.